As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. I'm really excited to have Katie joining us today from St. Louis. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. And we're so excited to hear your presentation and your story. Katie Williamson is an entrepreneur and web designer. She has lived with narcolepsy with cataplexy for 6 years. And by sharing her story, she wants to raise awareness of this life-changing condition. And it is my huge honor and pleasure to introduce my friend, my co-advocate and Rising Voices speaker, Katie.
Thank you, Julie. I'm really excited to be here and sharing my story with all of you. So as Julie said, I am from St. Louis, and I grew up in a suburb of St. Louis that was idyllic. It is green, and there's lots of room to play, and my brother and I like to go swim, run around the neighborhood in the summers, and sometimes we attended summer camps. My dad is a family practice doctor, and my mom is a preschool teacher, and then I have a younger brother as well, and I had a really great childhood with my brother. I really enjoyed art and music classes, and there was always a note on my report card about being a little too chatty in class when I was younger. But I ended up, I headed to college, and it was really an amazing time. I developed some really great friendships, discovered my love of graphic design, and I met my wonderful husband, Chad, when I was in college as well. At the age of 22, I graduated from college with a degree in studio art and graphic design and minors in history and art history. I had a lot of interest in college, to say the least. And I went to college in Chicago, and I ended up moving to the city permanently after college. About 2 years after college graduation, my husband and I got married in my hometown church, and we lived in Chicago for an additional 2 years. And then we decided to move to North Carolina so I could go to graduate school, and I completed my master's in interactive media. We loved living in North Carolina. It's a beautiful green state. And after I finished my degree, we moved to the city of Greensboro, and we bought our first house while we were there. And I started a job at the university I attended. And I did marketing and recruiting for different graduate programs. So about 2 years after I started my job at the university, I found myself having a really hard time staying awake in the afternoon. Specifically, I would be trying to write an email, and I would type a bunch of gobbledygook, or the email, if you read it closely, it didn't quite make sense. What I was trying to say just wasn't coming through, or I'd put a wrong word in the email. And I also had a really hard time driving home from work. I lived about 35 minutes from the university, and driving home was difficult for sure. I remember one day in particular It was a colder day, but I rolled down the windows. I think I had the air conditioning on, cranked the music up, and took the back roads instead of the interstate because I thought it was a better idea to drive on the back roads instead of with all the traffic, I guess. Why? I don't know. But I made it home. And I remember getting home and telling my husband, I'm so tired. I don't know what's going on. You know, I don't know what to do because I had never had this issue before. But all around this time was also, it was almost my husband's 30th birthday. And I had been planning this big birthday party for him. So I kind of had to put me being tired and sleepy on the back burner because we had family and friends coming in from all around the country to celebrate his 30th birthday. But a couple of nights before the birthday party, his best friend and wife came in from Omaha, Nebraska, and we picked him up from the airport and we went out for dinner and drinks. And at some point we decided to head back and pick up some Krispy Kreme donuts because since we were close to Winston-Salem, and that is the birthplace of Krispy Kreme donuts, so we decided to go to one of the originals. And while we were driving there, someone said something funny and we were laughing. And I remember having this really strange feeling in my hands, in my face, and I couldn't put a name to it. I couldn't really describe it. And I wasn't going to say anything because we were celebrating and it was this really fun, exciting weekend. So I kind of just pushed it to the back of my mind and kept going, planning everything for his birthday. The next day was my husband's big birthday bash. We had a great time that night. After most of the guests had left, my husband and his friend and I were looking at some pictures on my digital camera, and we were laughing and sharing things about the evening. And there was one picture that must have been really funny that we were all laughing at. And all of a sudden, my legs gave out, and I kind of slumped back against the wall and just completely fell to the ground. My camera flew out of my hands, and I had no control over my body. I couldn't move my arms, my legs, but the whole time I was completely conscious too. It was really scary and I had no idea what was going on. But at the same time, I was really embarrassed because I hadn't had that much to drink, but I didn't want, you know, my husband's friend to think that I was drunk and this was something that was happening because of alcohol or anything. I was completely alert and it was just really scary. This whole thing probably lasted 15 to 30 seconds, but it felt like an hour to me practically. But as soon as I could sit up, I just told them I was fine. And, you know, I was just going to go to bed and not to worry about anything. The next day I was feeling fine, but after we had taken my husband's friend and his wife to the airport, I ended up having another one of these episodes where I was laughing and ended up falling to the ground. It was really scary and I was starting to worry because I didn't know what was going on. A week later, after multiple unexplained episodes, I ended up in the emergency room. That evening, I had an MRI and an EKG. The good news was that everything was normal, and I left the emergency room with a diagnosis of drop attacks from the doctor and the recommendation to see a cardiologist. I didn't really feel like that was the issue, but didn't really know what else to say at that point. I still really didn't know what was going on in my body. And I went from being active and running around, doing errands and different things to all of a sudden I was couch bound just in case I had one of these mystery episodes. So the following day, I went into the ER 2 days in a row. The next day, the attacks of body weakness were so bad, I could barely stand and I headed back to the emergency room. And my mom actually flew in that day. She was there for my husband's birthday party like a week or two before, and she came back in because we knew something was going on. I ended up spending 2 nights in the hospital where the doctors ran every test they could think of, and, you know, test results were negative or they didn't show any issues. And in the end, I remember talking to a neurologist late at night. You know, they come in and do rounds, and it was like 2 in the morning. And he said, this could be narcolepsy with cataplexy, so you should go see a neurologist. And I'm like, okay. I took my orders after I was out of the hospital, and I went to a neurologist as soon as I could. while I was at the neurologist, I don't really think he was convinced that I had narcolepsy. I think he was saying that maybe I was psychosomatic and that I was stressed, and that's why I was having these reactions. But while we were talking, or while he was giving me a neurological exam, I had some weakness in my legs, and he could tell, and he knew that wasn't normal. And so it ended up that he ordered a sleep study for me, and the sleep clinic had an opening like a couple days later. So I was able to get into a sleep study really quickly, and probably, you know, 6 weeks after the severe onset of symptoms, I got a phone call from a nurse at my doctor's office saying that my test results were back. It looked like I did have narcolepsy, and it was time for me to come in so that way that we could talk about treatment plans. So it was definitely not a very, it was like a very strange way to get a diagnosis. And I was relieved to have the diagnosis, but I was not excited to have this diagnosis of narcolepsy. So narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disorder that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. It affects 1 in 2,000 people, about 200,000 Americans, and about 3 million people worldwide. The symptoms of narcolepsy, people can have a combination of these symptoms. Excessive daytime sleepiness is periods of extreme sleepiness during the day that feels comparable to how someone without narcolepsy would feel after staying awake for 48 to 72 hours. And the way daytime sleepiness or excessive daytime sleepiness manifests itself in people with narcolepsy can kind of come on in different ways. Sometimes you'll feel the sleepiness come on and you need to lay down and take a nap, but it doesn't hit right away. Other times you'll have micro sleep where maybe you'll see someone at the movies or at a baseball game or something, and they're kind of are on a plane, and they kind of, you know, their head falls forward and they pop right back up awake. And so that's a micro sleep. So people with narcolepsy can have those fairly often. Cataplexy is the next symptom, and striking, sudden episodes of muscle weakness, usually triggered by strong emotion, such as laughter, exhilaration, surprise, or anger. The severity may vary from a slackening of the jaw or buckling of the knees to falling down. The duration may be a few seconds to several minutes, and the person remains fully conscious during the episode. And so cataplexy was what I was experiencing when I would have the episodes, and I had severe cataplexy when I was falling down. Not everyone has that severe of cataplexy, but it definitely was manifesting in me very severely. And laughter definitely can trigger it for me. Hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations are visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations upon falling asleep or waking up. These can be frightening and confusing. I have some auditory hallucinations. Sometimes I'll wake up during the night and I'll think I'll hear my dad making coffee downstairs and like walking around, but I don't live with my parents anymore. So I'm just kind of hearing these things and I kind of have to snap out of it. And I realize that I'm not hearing that, but it's very confusing to say the least. Sleep paralysis is the inability to move for a few seconds or minutes upon falling asleep or waking up. It's often accompanied by hypnagogic or hypopompic hallucinations. For a long time, I wasn't having sleep paralysis. I've had a few episodes of it now when I fall asleep. And right with talking to Julie and a couple other people, it sounds like sleep paralysis in the way it feels and manifests can be very different in each person as well. Disrupted nighttime sleep. Unlike public perceptions, people with narcolepsy do not sleep all the time. The timing of sleepiness is off with narcolepsy, so one may fight sleepiness during the day, but struggle to sleep at night. I definitely have disrupted nighttime sleep. For me, it almost manifests like insomnia to an extent. I'll fall asleep for a few hours, and then I'll wake up and I feel up for a little bit and then I can fall back asleep. Now I have different ways to work through that. So that way I get better sleep at night. But it definitely was a big problem when I was first diagnosed with narcolepsy. There are two types of narcolepsy. Narcolepsy with cataplexy, which is type 1. Narcolepsy without cataplexy is type 2. Recent research suggests that narcolepsy with cataplexy is caused by a lack of hypocretin, a key neurotransmitter that helps sustain alertness and regulate the sleep-wake cycle. And I have narcolepsy with cataplexy, or type 1 narcolepsy. The main way narcolepsy is diagnosed is with a 24-hour sleep study that includes a nighttime portion, polysomnograph, and a daytime nap portion, a multiple sleep latency test to record one's brainwaves. The diagnosis is mainly based on how quickly and frequently one goes into rapid eye movement, or REM, the dream sleep stage during these tests. So that's the main way. And you might see people with like a bunch of wires all over them and on their legs. And they're typically having one of these tests where it's recording the brainwaves. So treatment. There is currently no cure for narcolepsy, but there are different treatments that can help you manage your narcolepsy symptoms. And really depending on type of narcolepsy you have, what symptoms you have, and a bunch of different, and the way you respond to medications, it's really going to depend on what treatment works best for you. There are wake promoters, histamine-directed or stimulants that are used for daytime sleepiness, nighttime medications for daytime sleepiness and cataplexy. Antidepressants are also used for cataplexy, along with scheduled daytime naps, social support such as group meetups and social media, and lifestyle changes that include sleep hygiene, diet, and fitness are all different treatments. I definitely do have a big combination of these treatments. I take a wake-promoting drug and an antidepressant for my cataplexy, along with scheduled daytime naps. Typically, I take two naps in the afternoon that are about 20 to 30 minutes apiece, and a couple hours apart, and that typically gets me through the day. Really great social support. I'm really grateful to be in Rising Voices and have a lot of different, and I've made a lot of contact through a bunch of different networks and connect with people over social media. And I love doing yoga and different things to help give me energy during the day as well. Okay. So at this point, I've been diagnosed for 6 years with narcolepsy. And after I was diagnosed, I continued to work for 2 years at the university at a desk job. And I've often felt like I was a burden to others for numerous reasons. I wasn't allowed to drive. I didn't drive very much during that 2 year period. And so I had to find someone to take me to work every day. I either had to have my husband take me, or I had a carpool most of the time, but sometimes that fell through. And I just had a whole bunch of people that I would try to go to see how I could get to work. And it was stressful for me. And I realized how stressful it was for my husband to make sure that I got to work and he got to work on time as well. On top of that, I also had a doctor's note so I could take a nap under my desk after lunch. I didn't mind telling people about my narcolepsy diagnosis, but I didn't tell everyone unless it came up in conversation. But you know, after lunch or at a certain time, I would close my door and I had a little mat under my desk that I would take a nap with in order to get me through the day well. So it was just kind of, I had to make sure that I arranged my day so I had time to take a nap and do everything I needed to do to feel okay during the day. Doing all of this was difficult for me because I was so independent before, and all of a sudden I had to rely on so many other people to get me to and from work. And I just felt like I was a bother all the time. But some of the things that really ended up helping was I ended up changing doctors. And I, at a certain point, the doctor that I was working with initially, I just could tell that we weren't a good fit for each other. And I was nervous to ask him, but I asked for a recommendation to go to a university hospital. And that ended up being a game changer. There was a specialist that I worked with, and I was able to really get the medications I was taking. I was able to like really get a good mix of medication for me to get me to where I am. And eventually, my husband and I moved closer to family. We moved from North Carolina back to St. Louis, where my parents are. And that has been really nice, just to have family closer for us. And I feel like my stress is less, and it's also lessened my husband's stress significantly, just having other people to help us out if we need it. Although, because my narcolepsy is more controlled now, overall things are better and I do drive now. So I've had a lot of positive changes. And I'm really grateful for the support of my family and friends. Everyone has been wonderful and they're always interested to learn more about narcolepsy. So the future, about 5 years ago, I started a web design business, and it's really changed since the beginning, but been doing that for 5 years, and it's been really great to be able to take control of my schedule and work at the times that work best for me. I know that I work best in the mornings, and in the afternoons, I'm very draggy, so I definitely am able to get a bulk of my work done in the morning and do less important things in the afternoons. And I've been able to work with some awesome creative business owners, and to see like where I am today versus 5 years ago. It's really awesome. And I'm really proud of myself for keeping up the business. And every time I pay myself, it feels really good to be able to do that. I love to travel and explore the world. Another thing that has become very important to me is my yoga practice. I have been practicing yoga on and off for 10 years, but especially in the past few years, since moving to St. Louis, I found a really great yoga community here and a really great yoga teacher that just everyone encourages each other. And we've even, during the pandemic, we practiced yoga outside 15 feet apart. And we did it up until a few weeks ago when it was pretty cold outside. So yoga has been a really important part of my life. And last but not least, this July, we got a new pup named Rue. He's a little fuzzy black terrier. In February, we lost our sweet dog named Hobbs. But we ended up in July, we knew we needed another dog and we found Rue. So I'm really excited to see where the future takes Chad, Rue, and myself. Raising awareness of narcolepsy has been something I've become really passionate about over the last few years as well. Because of the low awareness, even among physicians, and misconceptions, there's an average of 8 to 15 years between symptom onset and diagnosis of narcolepsy, and sometimes 10 to 15 year delays are not uncommon. So I was diagnosed really relatively quickly, and I'm really grateful for that, but I'm not the norm. It takes a lot longer for people a lot of times. And it's estimated that the majority of people with narcolepsy are currently undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. It's definitely less than 50% of people who have narcolepsy are diagnosed. Common misdiagnoses include epilepsy, depression, and schizophrenia. So some of the things that I've been doing to raise awareness of narcolepsy: in 2018, my mom and I planned a narcolepsy walk. We did one in St. Louis, and it was really great to have friends and neighbors. And I had some friends drive in all the way from Chicago, join us for a walk and to help raise awareness for narcolepsy. I've also done some advocacy work. I was able to go to DC in February and actually go to many senators' offices and meet with congressional aides and ask them to continue to fund sleep research and to ask for specific requests in the budget that will help advance sleep research and the awareness of narcolepsy and other sleep disorders. And then last but not least, I love being on the World Narcolepsy Day Committee. My husband and I got into it in Rue. We had a good time with the Cloud campaign. And I worked on the webpage, and the group that I worked with was really awesome. I love getting to know all of them. So it's been really fun getting to raise awareness. Definitely advocacy work and raising awareness for narcolepsy has been one of the bright things of 2020. So Rising Voices is a program from the nonprofit organization Project Sleep that empowers patient advocates to share their stories and improve public understanding of narcolepsy. Thank you.
Hey, Katie. Great job.
Thanks, Julie.
I've heard your story a few times and it's powerful every time. And I love how we're even keeping it updated because you've done so much in the last couple of years.
Well, a lot of it is because of you. So,
okay. But when did you do the Rising Voice? Is it 2018?
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
We have a few questions for you, Katie. One is, how do you manage your cataplexy now? And, you know, do you still, I know you're on medication, but do you still have some that comes through sometimes, or how is that going?
So yes, I still do have cataplexy. I would say I have the smaller, like I'll feel it in my legs or in my jaw a couple times a week, but I don't have like really big instances of cataplexy that often. I would say maybe like 4 or 5 times a year. It depends on how much fun I'm having, I guess. I see my doctor every 6 months, and last time I went, I was like, thought I was going to go 6 months without, you know, any major cataplexy. And it was like a week before I had cataplexy. So, and it seems like my dogs are always involved. Like they're just funny.
They're so cute. That's why.
You know, Hobbs was funny and Rue is funny. So, really? You know, so I have to be careful.
I think Rue would cause me to have cataplexy too, because he does these really funny, like he like attacks like a sprinkler and it's so cute and funny. You sent me videos and I haven't had cataplexy watching your videos, but I could see it being very cataplectic. So, so is it mostly positive for you? Do you ever have negative emotion ones or?
I don't think so. No. Yeah. I would say it's all positive.
That's good because being in a relationship and for me being annoyed is a big trigger. So that's never.
I might have it like on occasion, but it's definitely much more, I would say like 90% positive and 10% negative. I would say maybe like it's like more shock or, you know, like if I'm like annoyed and shocked or something.
Yeah. And surprised or yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a lot of different questions. Another question is a tough one. I think, Katie, for asking a good, tough, philosophical, what is something that you wish you could tell your younger self? Now that you've been living with narcolepsy for a while. So maybe your recently diagnosed self, possibly?
Guess that it will get better. You know, when I was diagnosed, there has been so much that has come. There's been so many advances, like in the past 3 or 4 years, because I went to the very first Narcolepsy Network conference I went to. It was like, here's the medications. And like, not much is coming down the pipe. And then the next year, it was like completely different tune. There was like all of these new discoveries. And so that's what I would say, that things definitely will get better. And I feel like, the other thing is, and I feel like I've done this, it took me a little bit because definitely the doctor that I was at first, like he was not a good match. And it took me a little bit to, it can be scary. It's like when, you know, should I change the hairstylist? It's kind of like, should I go see a different doctor? Like, what if they're not any better? I mean, it helps a little bit that my dad was a physician too, but you need to advocate for yourself. So like, if you don't feel comfortable talking to, like, I was actually reflecting on this recently. I didn't feel comfortable talking to the doctor about my narcolepsy symptoms and like what was happening. I didn't feel like he understood. And like he like couldn't, even though obviously like none of the other doctors that I've seen have had narcolepsy, they've all had patients that have experienced the same thing that I have. And so they're like, yeah. And he just looked at me like I was insane. And so, like, I, like, didn't really want to talk about anything. And so definitely it's like, okay, after, like, so I'm like, okay, like, I know things will get better. And, you know, if you are not happy with where you are, then, you know, make the change and, like, fight for it. Like, if your insurance is like, no, you can't go see that doctor, tell them that that's, like, the only doctor that you can see, or, you know, figure out a way. They say, no, we're not going to cover this medication. You got to fight for it. That's what's going to make your life better.
Yeah. I think one of the most powerful questions people can ask sometimes to it, you know, it's really hard. It's intimidating. Like you just said, to figure out whether your doctor's, like, good enough or, you know, like, right for you. But one of the questions is to ask, how many other patients do you have with narcolepsy? Can be sometimes an insight without offending anyone, you know, just to find out, because, like, maybe he was just looking at you that way because he doesn't know that much, but he's trying to put on an air of professionalism.
Yeah.
But there's not many doctors that are specialists. And I think a lot of people treat narcolepsy, more sleep doctors treat it than maybe are really good specialists. So yeah. I'm glad that to a better doctor.
Yeah.
And self-advocacy is so important. Unfortunately, it takes so much energy. So let's see. We have lots of questions for you. We have a question about, could you talk about the challenges and benefits of working independently instead of a desk job?
So some of the benefits are that you have your own schedule. You know, it's, like, completely up to you, but that can also be a bad thing because you have to manage yourself. And so I can work my own schedule around it. You know, I can take a nap when I need to. It was nice because I could schedule yoga into my schedule. But I mean, you know, at the other end, you have to really be dedicated to finding business, make sure that there's money coming in, and, you know, making sure that you're offering what people need or want. Do you have to like what you're doing? Because it can be all consuming. Because I'm sure, Julie, you understand, like, not like you're probably doing Project Sleep stuff a lot. Like, you're, like, sitting on the couch, like, watching TV and doing
social media. Well, I don't have TV, so that helps.
But I know you watch Netflix, don't you?
I watch Netflix on my computer. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's easy to, you know, be scrolling on social media and commenting and watching Netflix or whatever. So it can be harder to, like, put that work away sometimes. But my husband also works from home, and we've both worked from home before the pandemic. So that's actually been a good thing sometimes, because we can kind of encourage each other to, you know, put the laptops away. But at the same time, if one of us is doing it, then the other one might keep doing it too. So we can encourage each other or be bad influences on each other. But I mean, definitely working for yourself can be, I think it can be pretty empowering too. It's just finding your niche and making sure that, you know, it's something that's going to be sustainable. So, I mean, it can take a lot of energy to work for yourself. So you have to make sure that you're up for that. But
yeah. Did you find any good resources that helped you figure it out? Or,
well, actually, like, one of the things that I did was I started building my business before I left my, now I'm like, oh, this was so long ago, before I left my desk job. And so I had two paychecks, or, you know, I had a paycheck coming in. And then when we moved from North Carolina to St. Louis, we lived at my parents' house for a year, partially because, like, we didn't know where we were going to live. So, you know, like, we were able to save money there. And then everything ended up, like, we bought a house, and then we both ended up working from home. But yeah, I mean, definitely, if you have a desk job already, trying to ease into a business is a good thing. But there's lots of online communities, and I started out working with a business coach too. And that was really helpful for me as well. And coaching or group masterminds and different things can be really useful.
How do you feel now about telling people about your narcolepsy? This is a question from Iris in London. Hi, Iris. How do you feel sharing about your narcolepsy now?
It's not anything that I'm like, hi, I'm Katie and I have narcolepsy. But if it comes up, or, like, it makes sense, like, there's, like, a reason to share, like, I'm not shy about it. And even at my old job, or when I had a desk job, I mean, I shared, and, like, I had a note on file with HR, partially because, I mean, there was no way to hide it because I got diagnosed and was in the hospital. Like, I ended up missing 2 weeks of work, you know, and I know that, like, people have a heart, or it's, you know, it's a big decision if people want to tell HR or not. But I mean, you should, if you work a regular job, you should be protected in the US by the ADA. But, you know, I mean, I think that's a personal thing about telling work. But yeah, I mean, I'm completely comfortable telling people about narcolepsy and that I have narcolepsy if it comes up.
And you, Katie is, she's one of the, she wears her wristband, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know.
And my
mom does too.
Hi, Katie's mom, if she's watching. So Meryl asked about your other symptoms besides cataplexy. I know, yeah, we kind of had an interesting conversation. Like, did you, I think, wasn't it like you figured out the sleepiness sort of like, can you re-explain that part about how basically that it was only like the doctor asking you sort of that you reflected back to realize that wasn't even happening?
When I was diagnosed. So like when I went to the hospital, like I was like, the cataplexy was so alarming because I mean, I could barely stand up and I knew I was sleepy, but it ended up like being put on the back burner. And I didn't realize that until, you know, now, like it makes perfect sense. But I mean, I didn't connect the two because I kind of remember being like, well, I'm having these spells like where like, you know, I go completely weak. I don't have any muscle tone, but I'm completely conscious. And they're like, are you sure you're conscious? Yeah, I, you know, and then, you know, and I'd talk about them and I'd be like, and sometimes I was tired. Or like I was like more tired than normal, but it was like very like an afterthought for sure. So the sleepiness thing when I was diagnosed, it was not something that I really, you know, I thought, oh, maybe I'm just not getting enough sleep. I don't
know. Let's see, we probably have more questions. We have a question from Alice about advocacy and can a list of congressmen be put on the site to have people? Yes, Alice, we have lots of great advocacy efforts. Thank you, Matt, for replying to Alice about that. We'll have a big push in February and March as the new appropriations language gets put together. So we'll have an important letter that you can help get your Congress person signed on to. So please save your spoons for now on your advocacy and then get ready to spend your extra spoons in February or March and make sure you're signed up for our e-updates. I think that we might have caught most of the questions. I'm sorry, there's a lot of comments, which is wonderful. And I'm sorry if I've missed any of your burning questions, but hopefully we caught them all. This has been incredible. Katie, I think, you know, you're just such an amazing woman. It's been wonderful getting to know you and be your friend and a co-lover of gummy candy. I'm pretty sure you love gummy candy too, right?
Not as much as you, but... yes. Like you're number one, I'm number two.
Hard to compete with this kind of a gummy problem. All right, guys. Well, thank you, Katie, and thank you for everyone for tuning in from around the world.
Thank you.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.